You're listening to Dine for the Podcast, a Shot Put Media production, presented by MasterCard. Start something priceless.
What's better in life than a bottle of wine, great food, and an amazing conversation?
My name is Kate Sullivan, and I am the host of To Dine For.
I'm a journalist, a foodie, a traveler with an appetite for the stories of people who are hungry for more. Dreamers, visionaries, artists, those who hustle hard in the direction they love. I travel with them to their favorite restaurant to hear how they did it. This show is a toast to them and their American dream.
To Dine For the Podcast is brought to you by Terlato Wine Group, Lavazza, and American National Insurance. To Dine For the Podcast is brought to you by Riazul Tequila, referred to as one of the best sipping tequilas on the market. It comes from the highlands of Jalisco, 7,200 feet above sea level. Riazul's agave has a higher sugar content, lending itself to a sweeter taste profile. If you are looking for a true sipping tequila with extraordinary depth after being aged 2 years in a cognac barrel, you'll have to try Riazul Tequila. Cheers, everyone. To Dine For the Podcast is brought to you by Lavazza. Four generations of the Lavazza family have been working to perfect the art of blending coffee since 1895 with a devotion to making coffee moments special. Signature blend Lavazza Classico, with its intensely rich flavor and sweet aromatic notes, is a celebration of the Italian way of life in every cup and is available any way you brew your coffee. To Dine For the Podcast is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. For 115 years, American National has remained committed to helping people and communities make a real difference in their lives. American National supports great local community organizations led by the kind of people you hear about on To Dine For, people who are inspired to make a difference and inspire others in return. American National's philosophy is helping where it's needed helps us all. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, and the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Welcome to Dine For the Podcast, where we meet the world's most creative and innovative minds at their favorite restaurant. On today's episode is Patty Ginich.
Throughout my career, I've been able to connect with so many people that are so different from me, but you build that common denominator and bridge in food.
Patty is a Mexican chef, TV personality, cookbook author, educator, and food writer. She is best known for her James Beard Award-winning and Emmy-nominated public television series, Patty's Mexican Table. Her first cookbook, also titled Patty's Mexican Table, was published in March 2013. Her second book, Mexican Today, was published in April 2016. And her third book came out last November, Treasures of the Mexican Table. Patty has the most fascinating background, born and raised in Mexico City to a Jewish family. Her journey to create this show and all of her books is an outstanding one, and I can't wait to dive into this conversation with Patty Ginich. Hi, Patty. How are you?
I am good, and you? So lovely to connect.
So first of all, thank you so much for being on To Dine For the Podcast. You know, it's always wonderful to interview another host of a PBS program, and you do such beautiful, wonderful work with your programs and your books. It's really a joy and an honor to interview you today, honestly.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. And I love your work. So
Thank you.
I truly love your work and what you do. So thank you so much for thinking of me.
Thank you, Patty. And you know, it's funny, you have such a fascinating path, and we're going to jump into that in just a second. But first, I'm going to begin this podcast the way I begin all my podcasts, by asking you, where is your favorite restaurant? And I know you live in the DC area, so it might be a spot, you know, close by to where you live, or you might take me back to Mexico City, where you were born and raised. So I'm just going to leave it to you. I know it's a tough one, but if you could take me only one place, where would it be?
That is a very tough question. But I have to say, My favorite place now of all time is very close to where I live here in Washington, D.C., and it's a pizzeria called Two Amy's.
Two Amy's.
Two Amy's. And I believe it got the name because the two owners that partnered to open the restaurant, their wives were called Amy. That's the story I heard. But that is, I think, one of the first restaurants that we went to when my husband and I moved to DC. That was almost 22 years ago. And I mean, Kate, we've been going for 22 years, first with our oldest son, who was one when we moved to DC, then with Alan and Sammy when he was born, then with Alan and Sammy and Juju, our growing, we've gone. I've gone by myself. I go with friends. I go with my husband. We go as a family. And I think I've gone every week since we moved here. And
For
many times
22 years?
for 22 years. So I couldn't even begin to count the times that I've gone to the place. And I love it for so many reasons. I love it because the food is extraordinary and solid. And it is. Every single time is just as good. It's just incredibly reliable.
And is it pizza and salads and Italian, or is it
Yeah.
what it sounds like?
So it's Napolitan pizza, and I always order the same exact one. My husband thinks I'm so boring. I get a pizza called the Norcia, which is, the Napolitan style pizza, very thin. It has the Two Amy's tomato sauce, and then it has mozzarella cheese. And under the cheese, it has thick slices of salami and large salami, unpretentious, just your basic salami. And then it has a lot of roasted red bell peppers. And then when I eat it, I put a lot of red pepper flakes on top.
Spicy
And the edges are kind of browned,
and
and so
crispy.
when I eat and crispy,
Yes.
and it's just like the perfect pizza for me. And I will not share. And then I always get it with an escarole salad or a little gem salad that has perfectly balanced vinaigrette that's thick and emulsified, and it has just the right amount of vinegar, which is a lot. And it's a very basic, unpretentious vinaigrette with little gem salad with hard-boiled eggs, and I devour it. And then with my family, we usually get the same appetizers every time, which is the risotto balls and a plate with anchovies and bread and butter and prosciutto.
So here's the deal. I thought you'd pick a Mexican restaurant, right? And this is what I love. I love when people surprise me. And I get the sense that this place brings you comfort, it brings you nostalgia, and it brings you delicious food all rolled into one.
It brings me so much comfort. I get out of there full and feel they're nurtured and satisfied. I know the waiters because this is something else that I love about the place, Kate. It is as solid and good to its clients as it is to its own people. So you will find the same host, the same waiters, the same cooks throughout the pandemic on Sundays. They used to make, but not anymore, homemade donuts. We would rush to get before
Well,
4.
that's a crowd favorite.
And the thing is, I also grew up eating pizza because this is something that people don't know that much about Mexico. You are likely to find a taco stand right next to a hamburger cart, right next to the corner that has pizza. And in Mexico, we love pizzas, but we recognize them. We put our Mexican stamp. Either with sliced pickle jalapenos, which I will add when we brought two Amy's pizzas home in the pandemic, or just dried chile de árbol and Mexican ingredients like chorizo or avocado. But yeah, people get surprised. And I think we eat Mexican food in my home every day. I mean, rice and beans is a staple. And then whatever Mexican food I'm testing, or Mexican style albóndigas, or carnitas, or tinga. And when we go out, my boys just don't want Mexican because we have Mexican every day. And it's funny because, Kate, when we travel, and we love traveling with our family once a year, we try to pick a place that sounds really far away and different. And
where are you going this year?
So we already went. We took our youngest one to, or Sammy and Alan couldn't join, but we took Juju to Morocco.
Oh, wow.
So yeah.
That does sound far away and exotic.
It is.
And did he love it?
Oh my gosh. The food was insane. The people were incredible. The sounds. I was so enchanted with the really strong sounds of the wind. And it was Ramadan, so you could hear people praying
at yes.
times of the day at the same time, like in a hum, you know,
yes.
during the trees. It was truly magical. But I think whenever we travel, the first thing I do is try to take the pulse of Mexican food. Like, is there Mexican food here?
Yeah, was there Mexican food in Morocco?
There was. There were a few taco places. There's always a kind of a taco place. Or a Tex-Mex style.
And do you try it, or are you intent on trying the local cuisine?
Yeah, no, I try everything, but yes. I always make a point to try Mexican food because I love taking the pulse of how Mexican cuisine is evolving beyond borders.
Yeah, and interpreted in a different language, right? In a different culture, right? Like, what does it mean to be, you know, like Mexican food in Morocco has probably a different spice or, yeah, I can see that. That's fascinating.
Exactly. I remember we one time took our boys on these once a year faraway trip and we went to Norway and we found venison meatball tacos. And it was like, what is this? You know what? It was delicious.
Yeah.
Or even in Philly, if you go to, what's the name of Michael Solomonov's restaurant? He has so many.
Ape
Fisher. Ape Fisher. He has that schnitzel taco, which is incredible there, you know? So I'm really open-minded. I love tasting and eating the traditional foods that I grew up with, the flavors of south of the border. But I also love experiencing and exploring new things because I really think a cuisine and people, if we don't open the windows and let new air to breathe, you kind of get stale.
Yes.
So is the food. But you people get surprised with the Italian. My boys, whenever we travel and I want to try Mexican food, or I'll go to the grocery store to see what are the food magazines like and what are the ingredients there. And I will make it a point to try the Mexican food that exists in a place, which my boys usually run away from because they're like, well, you came to Morocco to eat Moroccan Mexican food, or we came to Norway to eat, you know, food from Scandinavia and not food from Mexico. But I do love tasting it. I'll usually eat it on my own. And then we love eating everything else. But yeah, I mean, there's great Mexican foods in BC too, but for... And I will go to Maíz 64 and El Sol and Habanero and Taqueria Sochi. But for some reason, if you ask me where I want to go any moment, like my first choice, if it is my birthday, anniversary, or just Sunday lunch, I will always say to Amy.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you for sharing your favorite restaurant. I really believe someone's favorite restaurant says a lot about them. And, you know, you have had such a varied and fascinating life, not only where you grew up in Mexico City and your mother and father, who your father was a restaurateur and a jeweler, and your mother had an art gallery. So you come from really fascinating people. But I'm just wondering if you could take me back, coming out of college, I believe you studied political science, right?
I did.
And so what did you want to be, and how did that trajectory change to what you're doing now?
Yeah, I wanted to be an academic. Well, first I wanted to be a sociologist, and then I studied political science.
Well, in a way you are.
Yeah, I think so too. But I wanted to be an academic and I wanted to study social sciences. And the UNAM, which is the big public university in Mexico, which had a great sociology and philosophy and history program, was on strike. So I got into ITAM, which is kind of a rigorous college that I wanted to get into and work hard because I went to such an easy middle school and high school that I don't think I studied 1 minute, you know, when I was in middle school and high school. So I really wanted to work hard. And I started in social sciences, and a year later, they changed it to political science. And I stayed because I was incredibly curious and I was loving the environment and the teachers and the students. And I stayed on, graduated, and became a political analyst. Married my husband, we moved to the US. And I wanted to continue with my studies and be an academic. But the moment that I touched the US, the bug started to bite me that I really was curious about food and was really missing Mexican food and was kind of in shock that I couldn't find the food that's just across the border in the US. And so that's how my path started of jumping into food. So it took me a while to switch careers because then I did a master's in Latin American studies and I worked in a think tank. And I was very stubborn thinking, you know, I have to do what I said that I was going to do and try to help strengthen democratic institutions in Mexico and build bridges between the two countries. And I realized that I could be more useful helping people with a recipe for a Wednesday night that would bring in new ingredients and techniques and stories into their kitchen, that to me meant more, that I could help a little more, like open people's minds.
Well, it's so funny. Let me stop you there because just as I hear you talk, I think of the quote from Jose Andres, who was on To Dine For, where he said, you know, he thinks that food is the strongest way we could ever have to build bridges between cultures and countries. And you said, you know, your original intent was to build bridges and to kind of, you know, that was really at the heart of what you wanted to do. And in first blush, you wouldn't think food would have anything to do with it, but it has everything to do with it, doesn't it?
I think so, because food leaves you no choice but to open your mind, because you're going at it outside of your myths and preconceptions. You're tasting it. It's like your animal self experiencing something. We have so many stubborn ways, you know, as humans, we need to categorize and label the world in order to navigate it. So we get set on our ways and in our beliefs. And once you taste something, it forces you to open or to kind of unlock a door that you didn't know you had. And it gives you the opportunity to experience not only the flavors and, you know, what the dish comes with in terms of experiencing it physically, but also learning what's behind it. And you're more open to hear the stories from the people who made it because they're feeding you or you're sharing a meal. So it kind of softens us, I feel.
Yes, like, it opens, allows us to listen. You know, when someone is feeding you, it's human nature to stop and listen. First of all, your mouth's full. You're forced to listen, but it allows you to have a reciprocity of wanting to hear their story too. You know?
Exactly. And in a way, it makes you a little bit more vulnerable in a good way.
Yes.
In a good way. Like it softens you. And I have found that food is the most powerful way to communicate. There's so many things that we can't express. Like, how could I say how accessible, accommodating, and hardworking Mexicans are than with a big bowl of enchiladas? You know, it's just accommodating. It's festive. It's easy. And when you see the way you make, for example, a Mexican salsa, you boil the tomatoes or tomatillos, throw them in a blender, and you don't peel them, you don't core them, you seed them, it's unfussy. And I think that our food is really a mirror of who we are as a people. If you think about French food, if you think about French people, I mean, I think they're lovely, of course, but I think they're a little bit more fussy than
They're unfussy is not a word I would describe the French. whatever the opposite of unfussy is.
Exactly. But if you look at their food, which is fabulous, it is fussy.
It's disciplined and it's
rigorous.
It's very vigorous and it's precise. French food is precise and it's also formal in a way. You know, there's a formality to French food that doesn't, it is the opposite of Mexican food.
I think so too. Yeah. And French food is like, this is for two people. Yes. Mexican food is like, let's see how many tacos we can get out of these things, you know? I think food says so much about people, that especially for people who are, as we were saying, very set on their ways, food helps you open up and experience things. So I have found that You know, throughout my career, I've been able to connect with so many people that are so different from me, but you build that common denominator and bridge in food.
We'll have more on this conversation in just a minute, but first, thank you to our sponsors.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you.
There's a funny thing about most insurance commercials, whether they feature lizards or birds or funny cartoon characters. It seems like they want you to think about anything but insurance. American National, on the other hand, has real local agents who get to know you, so they can help you reach better decisions about your insurance to make sure you're protecting what matters most to you. American National agents are part of your community. They're your neighbors. So whether it's solutions for your home, your small business, your farm, or your life, you can count on your local American National agent to make sure you get the discounts you deserve and the protection you need without paying for extras you don't. With American National, you get an ally, not just a web page. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write in the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by Riazul Tequila, referred to as one of the best sipping tequilas on the market. It comes from the highlands of Jalisco, 7,200 feet above sea level. Riazul's agave has a higher sugar content, lending itself to a sweeter taste profile. If you are looking for a true sipping tequila with extraordinary depth after being aged 2 years in a cognac barrel, you'll have to try Riazul Tequila. Cheers, everyone. Now back to our conversation.
Your show, Patty's Mexican Table, which has done how many seasons?
So actually, we're going on our 12th, if you can.
Oh my gosh, your 12th season is really a chance to learn recipes and for you also, speaking of the sociologist in you, to share the history behind the food. You're not just giving recipes, you're really giving a whole like 360 view of the recipe. And you have won so many awards, from James Beard, Emmy nominated. You have really run the gamut as far as awards and accolades. But your recent work, which was more of a documentary style, can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think it allowed you to get back to what you originally wanted to do when you were coming out of college. Can you share what that is?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think I've come full circle in a way, Kate. So my new docu-series is called La Frontera, which translates to the border or borderlands. And we just premiered the second season in April. And it is road trip that I take all the way from San Diego, Tijuana to Brownsville in Tamaulipas. So it is the 1,951 miles that are the U.S.-Mexico border. But it's not what people think about the border, you know, i.e. fence. It is the borderland communities that live on what we know as the U.S.-Mexico region. That's 31 million people.
Wow.
That are living in these incredible dimension where there is this constant back and forth between English and Spanish and U.S. and Mexican culture. And it's not only the U.S. and the Mexico that exists so intensely at the border, where people get along so well and do business together, and there's families and there's traditions, and there's so much more going on than what you hear on the news. But it's also the many different immigrant waves. You know, migration is as historical as humans. You know, migration has existed since the very first migration. So people continually move, are in movement, and the US-Mexico border has been a magnet, of course, not only for Mexicans wanting to come to the US, but for Americans moving to Mexico and for many other people from many other countries that have come. Historically, you have the Chinese that came to build the railroads in California, were kicked out, and are now many of them in Mexico and Mexicali. You have the Syrian Lebanese in El Paso. You have the Cubans and Haitians in Tijuana. You have Japanese in Texas. It's just like microcosm.
That's fascinating because it's not just Mexicans.
No,
Yeah, it's not,
it's
yeah,
not just the
people
Mexicans.
don't realize it until you're there that this is really like a door that swings open. And it's not just about Mexicans and Americans. It's really about so many cultures trying to come into the US. As you put your producer hat, and first of all, this must have been so much fun to put together, but also so intellectually rigorous because you're thinking, how do I tell this story from not only the political importance of this, but also from the food? You know, I'm sure you're on both sides. You're in Mexico and you're in the US. Talk to me about that balance. How did you, when you were just kind of drafting this and putting it on a whiteboard and kind of brainstorming, what was your mission?
I mean, of course, food is a very important vehicle. It is not the main theme, but it's a sidekick that just helps us jump into any situation and talk to any people, you know, to any person and any character, and just get into any place because people are always eating, right? So, you know, we knew that food was going to be, of course, an important element. But then what I really wanted to do was just to live the life of a borderlander or a fronterizo on both sides of the border to really change and disrupt the narrative that it's not about the wall and it's not only about the undocumented people on either side of the border, but it's about the communities that have been there for many generations or newer generations. But there's, as we said, 31 million people that are not moving, that are living there on those in those communities. And so it is. So the first thought was, I really want to go and eat with the boxer and the politician and the musician and the muralist and the teacher and the cook and the writer and the everyday profession, you know, everyday people, and just live a slice of the pie of the life of a borderlander. And it was fascinating because then we approach it through a different route. It's just, I'm here. Can you invite me, you know, into your life for a day or 2 days or 3 days? Attend a school, go to a concert. And what we found is that in this place where the two countries are in constant rubbing, there's this new dimension that opens up, these like third culture, third country. I mean, of course, the US continues to be the US and Mexico continues to be Mexico, but there's this new dimension that opens up of new possibilities of things that happen that couldn't happen anywhere else because people have the access to these both worlds all the time. And so it is truly fascinating what can happen with art, what can happen with business, what happens with trade, what happens with technology.
How many episodes is was season one and two?
So season one was 2 1-hour episodes, and season two is 3 1-hour episodes.
Because I just as I'm listening to you. You have enough just on this, like I can tell as a producer myself, you have enough of what you just said to do like 20 episodes, right? Like
Oh
how do
my
you
gosh,
edit it? How do you whittle it down? That must have been one of the biggest challenges of putting of kind of, but I think that you actually really helped me when you said you wanted to come from the lens of the people who were living in these border towns and let their story be the story. You know, like that really actually helps to kind of shape where we're going with this. Did you have people that scouted that went there and then scouted before you got there? Or did, I mean, how was what was that process like?
Well, so I pre-scouted first, And then part of the production team went and scouted before production. And then we went to film. But there's a lot of research that went on. And I really think there is a change between season one and season two. If you have the opportunity to watch, and now there you can stream on PBS.org or Amazon Prime. Season one is a little bit more food heavy, I think. Season two, I feel like we went in a little bit more gutsy and bold and tackled more difficult things.
Yes.
From a different perspective, you know, migration and people seeking asylum and things like that, that we barely touched on season one, because those are current themes and concurrent themes at the border. But it was mostly when I've tried to really become a much better host as the time moves on. And I realized that I can be a much better host if, you know, when we're in Mexico and we're doing Spanish, we don't translate. So, and the audience is much more open for that. So you're subtitling. And then when you're in the US, when people are speaking in English, you're doing English, but we're subtitling that in Spanish. So we truly did this borderlander thing where it's both languages at the same time. Either you're talking, you know, the language, or you're seeing it in the subtitle, because that's how people there live. But also really bringing the microphone and not translating for anybody, really just bringing the microphone to the people and to these towns and these places that have no opportunity to tell their stories, because they're being so manipulated by the news and the media in every second. Because as my friend Alfredo Corchado told me in the first season, the border is really used as a political piñata. And what people at the border want to do is they just want to live their lives, and they love the borderlands. And one of my main goals was to show why people love the borderlands so much. And
why do they? You know, because from an outsider, it's seen as a place of strife, a place of controversy, a place of hardship. So why do they love the borderlands?
And that is the irony of life, right? It is. So to give you an example, I'm a Mexican born, Mexican raised. All my family's in Mexico, my parents, my grandparents, my sisters. But we come from a long line of refugee immigrants that came from Poland, from Czechoslovakia, from Austria. And then I moved to the U.S. And then I'm a Mexican-American. I have kids here that are born American. We're also Jewish. And Mexico is a mainly Catholic country. And I've always felt like I've treaded worlds a little. When I moved to the U.S., I was too Mexican for people in Texas. People could, you know, they had a really hard time understanding my accent and my very
You were too Mexican for the folks in Texas. Oh, Patty.
In Texas. And in Mexico, my last name is Polish, you know? Yeah. So at the border, I felt so at home because people are so used to navigating within cultures and languages and traditions. And it is not that things become blurry and mixed. The Mexican is like even more intensely Mexican. And the you know, Texan cowboy is even more Texan cowboy. But there is this thing that happens where people become incredibly accommodating and accessible and resilient and resourceful, that open up the opportunity for, you know, being understanding and comfortable. And there's this ease, there's this beauty, there's this magic at the border that is really hard to explain. I've never met, Kate, people so generous and warm and hospitable. I mean, Mexico is the number one, you know, hospitable country of hospitality, you know, known worldwide. But at the border, there's these, it's hard to understand. You have to go there. And the same thing happens with art. It's like new possibilities have the opportunity to exist. For example, there's an all-female mariachi band in El Paso. They get their costumes made in Ciudad Juarez. They're these really strong women that dress in a very traditional way with a mariachi garb, but mariachis are men in Mexico. There's mm-hmm. no possible way that you could find a female mariachi band south of the border. Mm-hmm. And so it's these, you know, new wow. things. You know, it can only yeah. happen there.
Yes.
They're at the border.
Right. That's a great example of, you know, in a culture that would never allow it, that is where they could thrive.
Exactly. But are they Mexican? 100%. Yes. Are they singing Mexican songs? 100%.
Yes.
But could that happen south of the border? No.
No.
How do you explain that? Or for yes. example, there is this guy who's making these incredible Tex-Mex style barbecue south of the border. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous. And he uses it for sliders, but he also uses it for tacos. Like, is it very Texan? Oh, it's deeply Texan, but yes. it's in Mexico and it's in a taco. You know,
yeah.
so these things that we as humans have a hard time understanding, because he's like, wait, women, no mariachi.
Right.
Barbecue in Texas, you know, but at the border, you have this permission to do more and play more.
It's this idea of code switching, right? Of that people who have to, it kind of permeates. It could be in any way or situation, have to switch between languages. And it could be, you know, how you feel at work versus how you feel at home, and how you have to code switch who you are, you know, in a different environment. You, my friend, have had to code switch pretty much your entire adult life. And I'm wondering, when you look back, what has that given to you, taken away from you, or how do you feel about that? Because just as you said, you felt the most comfortable at the border because it yeah. really represented you, which is code switching. Like, how has that shaped you?
I love these questions so much, Kate. And I think it's been a journey for me. I would say for the first half of my life, I was like, where do I belong? I don't mm-hmm. fit in here. I don't fit in there. But I feel like as the years have gone by, it has given me these really strong common denominator that has allowed me to connect to anyone under mm-hmm. any circumstance. It mm-hmm. has given me this increasing capacity of enormous empathy. You know, so as a Mexican immigrant, I feel like, and also coming from a long line of migrants to Mexico, I feel that I can now connect with any immigrant from anywhere in the world, anywhere. And I have this immediate sense of understanding and empathy that I treasure and appreciate so much. And I think that it gives me this opportunity to bring the platform and the microphone to people in a very unpretentious, generous way of wanting to hear and wanting to understand. And I don't come at it with like, oh, I know, I've been here, I've been there. I come at it because I'm not from La Frontera. I'm not from the borderlands, but I am internally a borderlander. Mm-hmm. And I feel that we all, in a way, are. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it coming at it from these ways, saying, you know, after doing Patty's Mexican Table for 12 years, mm-hmm. where I've treaded Mexico, the U.S., back and forth, as you're saying, code switching, the moment I get to the border, I'm in heaven. Mm-hmm. I can speak English and Spanish in the same sentence, and I'm mm-hmm. totally understood.
And it's interesting because, you know, let's say you never left Mexico City, right? And let's say you still developed your passion for food, right? You could have had a program in Mexico. You could have shared recipes. But being able to share recipes in a different land with people who don't fully get it, what you really get to showcase and highlight the beauty of the country in a different way than if you lived in Mexico. Because you know what I mean? Mexicans would be like, yeah, we get it, Patty, we get it. But Americans are like, wow, we didn't know that. And so there's a different environment, right?
Totally. But you know what happened to me, which is so crazy? So I started Patty's Mexican Table with that. You know, I want to share my Mexico. I want to explore Mexico with Americans, with people from outside of Mexico. And as the years went on, it became increasingly apparent to me that the one who needed to learn more about Mexico was me, because I come from Mexico City. I'm centered in Mexico City and the states around it. Even though I had studied the entire country, I did a thesis on federalism since 1860. I have lists of like every single governor for every single state. I had done so much political and social and historical research. But eating your way through a place and meeting the people is so different. Mm-hmm. I started learning more about Mexico while being in the US, being nostalgic and romantic about my country and meeting Mexicans, like the Mexican diaspora that lives in the US, which is so atomized, unfortunately, but so diverse. I met here in a single panaderia people from six different states that I haven't been to and have eaten those sweet breads or pan dulces from five different states in one place. That only happens abroad, right? Yes. And the same thing started happening to my audience. I started thinking this is for America. This is for the mainstream. And my relationship with my audience started to change when I started going to places that I had never been to. Because I started going to the places I knew, like, oh, let me take you to the place I miss. Let me take you to the place I know. But it slowly but surely changed to come with me. I haven't been to Sinaloa. Come with me, explore Sonora. Come with me in all these places that I had never been to. And learning all these things as a Mexican from Mexico City, corn tortilla rules. I used to think flour tortillas, oh, that's what Americans use on wraps, you know?
Right.
Until I went to Sinaloa and Sonora and learned that flour tortillas in Mexico are just as important, relevant, and delicious as corn tortillas. But the same thing started happening to my audience, Kate. My Mexican, Hispanic audience now over-indexes over any PBS show because the same thing has happened to them. They realize that
they don't know Mexico.
They don't know Mexico.
Right. You are bringing them. It's not just about the Americans that are watching. It's about bringing Mexicans along for the ride because they too want to learn about their country.
Exactly. Because Mexico is so huge and rich and diverse. And the humbling never stops because I was like, oh, the U.S. is a young country and the history is not as long as Mexico. So I used to have this idea of the U.S. being more unidimensional. And as I'm traveling through the U.S. promoting Patty's Mexican Table and my cookbooks, I'm learning about all of these regional barbecues and all of these regional foods and all the diversity and richness. So it's like, okay, I thought I knew about Mexico. I didn't know. I thought I knew about the U.S. I didn't know. And then I get to the border and it's like, this attitude of just learning and exploring that you see at the border all the time. People at the border, and it's not, when we talk about people at the border, it's not just the people that live next to the line, right? Or the fence. It's the borderland communities. They just have to be so resilient because they're working against the odds every single day because of politics, because of the things that concentrate there that have to do with documented or undocumented trade of all sorts. They get caught in the middle of so many things, and their bonds and their moral fiber is just really incredible. The family values that you find in the borderlands, the work ethic that you find in the borderlands. I was in Hatch, New Mexico. It's a community very close to the border, and I learned from Andrea, who's a Hatch Chile farmer, she's a fifth generation, that five generations of her family, Mexican origin, probably the border crossed them, you know, many generations ago, all of them are farmers that are putting food on America's table. But all of the generations have at least 50% of their family members that have gone to serve the country. So it's people that are selfless. They're putting food on the table and they're serving and protecting the country. And it's people from the borderlands. So it's all these stories that you just don't hear about.
Patty, when you think about your future, because you could really be doing this for the rest of your life and still, you know, there are more stories to tell. What is your immediate vision for what you're doing, not only with your PBS program, your documentary, and your cookbooks, or what is next for you? I don't want to... our time is limited, but I wanted to really get a sense of where you're headed.
So I love where I'm headed because I feel like I've come full circle, and what I'm doing right now is what I love doing. I just want to do more of what I'm doing. I want to learn more, meet more people, and hopefully help bring this platform and this microphone to more unexpected and unknown stories.
Oh, well, Patty, we have something in common. We both have three boys. I have an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 4-year-old. So at some point, we'll have to get together at two Amy's and
Of
swap
course.
stories. Next time I'm in DC, I will look you up.
Absolutely. Please let me know when you come to DC
I would
and we'll
love
get
that.
your boys with my boys, though my boys are a lot older.
That's okay. We have a lot in common, though. Being the mom of three boys is a warrior mentality.
It is a wonderful thing. You're a warrior, but you're also the queen.
Yes.
It
Yes, it's a lot, but it's a lot of fun too. It's a lot of fun.
is.
Thank you, Patty, for this time. I know
Thank
that a lot of
you.
fans of your show will be listening to this and will appreciate the added context to what you're doing and how you're doing it, because it's really an amazing and remarkable thing. So, blessings to you. Have a wonderful day, and thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks for listening to Dine For the podcast. For more information on the show, the guests, and the podcast, head to todinefortv.com. You can find us on Instagram at todinefortv and Facebook at todinefor with Kate Sullivan. Thanks to the sponsors of To Dine For the podcast, American National, Lavazza, and Terlato Wine Group. Special thank you to producer and sound editor John Gulmer. To the loyal followers of this program, cheers! Stay hungry and stay inspired. I'll see you back at the table soon.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.